The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We're going to look at the week trending, some of the stories making the news this week. And we have three guests with us to do so. Sinead O'Carroll, the news editor of thejournal.ie. The screenwriter and writer Stephanie Prisoner, new book, Why Can't Everything Just Stay the Same? That is the correct title, isn't it?
It's part of the title, yeah. I mean, I went for like one of those long things where you can't really have a hashtag and it's really hard to promote. So yeah, next time I'll definitely go with brevity.
It's good to know you're planning another book already. And Michael Clifford is with us as well, special correspondent of the Irish Examiner, but the author of Force for Justice, the Maurice McCabe story. Michael, thank you very much for joining us.
I went for brevity, Matt.
Yeah, and hopefully there won't be a sequel.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Anyway, let's move on. Actually, you had the former Garda Commissioner launching your book, Stephanie, this week, didn't you?
Segway. I did, yes. What a segue. Yes, Noreen launched my book in Nando's on Tuesday night.
Hang on, why Nando's? I've never heard of a book launch done in Nando's before.
I know, right? It was amazing. So, because I love rules, and in the book I talk about how when you go into Nando's, the waiter comes over and says, have you been with us before? And if not, they explain all the rules of Nando's and how I believe there should be a friendly Nando's worker for every situation in life. So then I decided I didn't want it in a bookshop or have a wine reception, so we all raised a wing to the book, and Noreen gave a lovely speech, and then I gave a speech, and then people ate wraps and chicken, and then we all went home sober.
Full of chicken,
full of protein.
Mike, can you not drink in Nando's?
You can, but
I've
we
only
didn't.
Been there once, and I just found if I brought the family there, it was just so expensive.
Well, you see, the wings were free, man. So I was like, there's win-win. Like.
How did you get Noreen O'Sullivan to launch a book for you?
I wrote to the Office of Garda Commissioner in June and said, I have this book and I would love you to launch it. You've probably read in the papers that, like, I constantly say that my childhood dream was to be the first female Garda Commissioner, and you stole my childhood dream, and would you launch my
you
book?
Owe me.
You owe me. And I got a letter back saying the Commissioner has advised me to respond and say that she would love to launch your book as you are one of her witty heroes. Please get in touch with this office closer to the time. And so closer to the time came, and the book is about how I hate change, and everything had changed, and I was like, who do I contact now? So I got in touch with her, and sure, who else, who better to launch a book about change and the challenges that come with it.
I should have thought of that.
Yeah, you should have launched your book.
You should have loved that, yeah. But yeah, so that's what happened.
Do you still harbour ambitions in relation to An Garda Síochána?
I was in Templemore for 2 weeks, and I left there to get my first professional acting job, and I said, I'll go back to Templemore when the acting stops. And
you had actually been recruited?
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, no, I stayed there on work experience because they had a ban on recruitment for a couple of years, because there was like you could go and do work experience, and then the next time they were recruiting, you would go in. So I was in I was in there for 2 weeks when I was called to do this acting job, and I really wanted to be a guard.
I never went back,
no. But then a guy that I was seeing actually did the train that was going for to be a guard, and he did those tests on jobs.ie that you have to do, you know, like which shape comes next, and I did them too, and I failed them. So like I would be a brilliant guard, and I don't know about guard commissioner, but like
to filling in all those breath test numbers probably.
Lads, come off it now, like, can we just ease up? We need to de-escalate the situation.
But I don't think there were rules for those breath tests, so she wouldn't have actually been able to follow any of those
I'm
rules.
I'm very
so.
Rule abiding. Except for like the green man, I think that's a little bit of a...
I would have been trouble if you were ever assigned to the traffic corps.
I wouldn't have been in traffic corps, like maybe for a week, but I would have sailed up the ranks. I'd have been sitting there next to Noreen and like, hey, move over. And then
so
I would
you think you'd have been management material for An Garda Síochána?
Definitely, why not? Like,
Michael Schiffer, what type of Garda would you have made?
I'd have made a great guard, Matt.
Investigative one. You'd have been in the investigative unit.
Possibly, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, any guards I've met. I've actually been mistaken for a guard a number of occasions.
How?
Just at various places. A fellow came up to me once and... Actually, it was a book signing for Michael Connolly, I think. And I was in a queue to get a book signed, and this guy's behind me says, are you a member? He said he was recently retired. So, yeah, I played on with it anyway. But I've been mistaken.
So you impersonated a Garda Síochána?
I've been mistaken a few times, all right, for a guard.
You're tall enough, isn't that what they used to say? You're tall enough.
You've the height for it. I played a guard in Can't Cope, Won't Cope as a cameo on my birthday. And they're like, I had to put on the uniform. But they have to like put bags and stuff over you when you're in public so that you're not able to... impersonate a guard. So,
what
like,
about the guy, the serving guard who appeared in
Love Hate?
Oh, yeah, I see. Yeah. I mean, but they have.
Sinead, had you ever ambitions to be a guard? What type of guard would you have made?
I'd never ambitions. I've definitely never been mistaken for a guard either. And I absolutely would hate to be commissioner. If there was any job going that I would like the least, that's the one.
I said in my speech on Tuesday night, if Britney Spears can get through 2007 and Noreen O'Sullivan can get through 2017, I can get through anything in life.
Listener wants to know, does your 2 weeks work experience involve inputting the breath test?
No, there was no breath test back in that day. It was
no boats or funds or anything like
there
that.
There was nothing, no. I just was learning the old bit of Gael Gael.
I did used to confiscate alcohol. I used to organise teenage disco in our GA club back home, and I was really good at finding the alcohol.
You're basically
and confiscate
guard,
it. So whatever that would make me.
What did you do with the alcohol once you confiscated
That's
it?
That's what the teenagers used to ask me, and I didn't tell them, and I'm not going to tell you.
Actually, you know, we're going to start somewhere different now, because this has completely gone into all sorts of places where we hadn't expected to go. I wanted you to talk about the drinking habits of the Irish centuries ago.
Yeah.
Tell us, I love this story from the week, from the builders of, what is it, the 16th century?
So a historian, a Tipperary woman, has found out that 14 pints a day was what your average builder would drink in Ireland. And this is probably, in a historical way, it's probably the where the drunken Irish stereotype comes from, when English people, who were also fond of a pint back then, and there was problems with drunkenness, but they, because the Irish, the mere Irish, they used to say, were even more prone to this alcohol. Now, there's a lot we don't know about the alcohol.
But there's suggestions it was very high volume, 7%
proof.
8%.
14 pints of that, no motion. And there was talk about, you know, they were sweating a lot and, you know, they were working hard and these were their calories. This was a lot of their calorie intake, was this beer. But I don't know how many excuses you can make for 14 pints still being 3 sheets to the wind.
Different, like I worked in construction in London for a while, and I know fellas who after work would have 8 pints in the evening, every evening. But that's the Irish way of drinking. You have them all after work, 8 pints. It could well be that 14 pints a day, they started just tippling away at 8 in the morning and managed to get their way through the day. People in continental Europe places now, they wouldn't go 14 pints, but they would drink throughout the day. It doesn't necessarily equate to binge drinking, even though it's 14 pints.
That's a great expression. It constitutes binge drinking, even though it was 14 pints.
It's throughout the day rather than a few hours, like.
This is so long ago, though. It's like, had the metric system changed? How much was a pint? How big was it? Like, what are we talking? How much was it costing? Was it taxed? I think we just have an awful lot of questions.
Well, talking about tax, because it did get rationed. So there was a bit of austerity after the 9 Years' War, and then the rations went altogether. So this was for soldiers. English soldiers in Ireland were allowed 8 pints a day, and then the rations were cut to 4 pints a day. And then after the 9 Years' War, none at all.
Common in a different perspective, doesn't it? If they're all going around half cocked, imagine the damage they were getting up to.
Yeah, but hold on. This is presumably only the builders. Presumably nobody else was drinking
well,
like that.
Soldiers,
but the soldiers were. The soldiers had these rations as well. So their rations was like 8's a lot less than 14. But
that's very stereotyping now, Matt. Putting it down to the builders.
But hold on. Was this a substitute for food?
Yeah, it was part of their calorie intake. They needed this.
It was a liquid diet.
How many buildings are left from that time? I mean, like how structurally sound for
these? That speaks for itself. They didn't stay up very long.
Okay, let's move on. Actually, I'm going completely out of sequence here. Sorry about this, because I do want to get back to the serious stuff about Harvey Weinstein in just a little while. Who's going to tell me about Ireland's very first cat lounge?
I can tell you about the cat lounge if you want. I'm disgusted by it.
You're not a cat person.
I'm not a cat person.
Are you a dog person?
No, I'm not an animal person, which is why I don't know if I should be talking about this.
I was actually thought you were going to say
so
you love dogs like
you're
I do.
An awful person.
No, I've never now kicked one or killed one. I'm not a psychopath.
Well, congratulations.
Like, you know, people, I don't hate them with like an active hatred. But I actually had an MRI scan on Sunday because they needed to check my head for something. Anyway, came back all clear, but the doctor said, have you a headache? And I said, yeah, I've had a headache for about 3 weeks. And she says, yeah, you've got a severe sinus infection there in the right hand side of your face, so you need to start taking antibiotics. And I blame cats, because I was around cats about 3 weeks ago and I think they gave me a sinus infection. Because
how can a cat give you a sinus infection?
I'm allergic to their dander, I always have been, and like they just shed everywhere. And I don't understand this, like, people's obsession with cats on the internet. Like, cats will eat you if you die. Like, if you die, cats will feed off you.
I took a straw poll in the office to see how many people. So this place, you go in, you get 90 minutes, you book your 90 minutes in Smithfield into this room, and they have between 5 and 10 cats that they're kittens at the moment. And you go in and they have a coffee machine, so you can pour yourself a cup of coffee and play with the kittens. And it's €15 for the pleasure of this 90 minutes. So I took a straw poll, and our office, out of about 15, 16 people, we were half and half. There was a lot of people there who were, they weren't too sure, but €15 might have been a tad expensive, but they were pretty happy to go in. But then
and
I looked up...
are preparing their P45s on the basis that you made a mistake
then I looked
them?
Up the rules of this cat lounge. So you go in and you have your 90 minutes and you're, you know, some of the rules are basic enough, you know, kids, very young kids aren't allowed, older kids have to be accompanied, la la la. But then if you want to take a photo with the selfie with the cat, you have to make sure the cat wants to. So
oh,
if the cat
on.
Doesn't want to, you're not allowed.
You have to ask the cat for permission.
And if you want the cat to play
otherwise
with...
otherwise it's going to be like that monkey that'll be claiming royalties for the photographs.
And if you want to play with one of the cats, you have to make sure the cat wants to play with the toy. Like, you can't force the toy on the cat.
And are you allowed to, like, assume the gender of the cat? And are you, like, where does this stop? That sounds like 15 cats in a room in Smithfield sounds like the start of a horror film to me. And to be asked to pay for the privilege, I can't think of anything worse.
I never liked cats. We got a cat in my home about over a year ago now, God, the time has flown. I dig cats. I mean, at least our cat I do, and I'm okay with cats, but going into a lounge to see cats and do your thing with cats, I'm not into that at all. But cats are okay by me, but I wouldn't go as far as having a lounge or anything, you know?
It's so meant to be therapeutic, yeah.
Is it?
I think a lot of it is probably people who can't have a cat in their apartment because of rules of like share living or someone's allergic or whatever. So if you want, the woman who is running the business says, you know, it's for your like little feline fix for
give
people who love cats.
Love
and you know, she'd people want, who love cats really love cats.
She'd want to have a lot of Ventolin inhalers stocked up because I'm highly allergic.
Peter says, I was reading about the Battle of the Boyne last night, 1690, and read that some sections of the Irish side didn't join the battle because they've been drinking all night. Any truth in that? It would probably make sense, wouldn't it?
Very believable. After the ration of 8 a day, and that's their ration, you can imagine when they went over their ration after the gallon.
James in Donegal says, though, wasn't beer safer to drink than the water back then? Probably
it's
was, you know.
Possible, yeah.
One of the most important stories of the week, and one, Sinead, you were with us earlier this week about, is the whole Harvey Weinstein story. But what we want to play for you now is a selection of some of the jokes that have been made over the years about Harvey Weinstein. And you're going to hear clips from 30 Rock, David Letterman and Seth MacFarlane.
I'm not afraid of anyone in show business. I turned down intercourse with Harvey Weinstein on no less than 3 occasions out of 5.
In some ways, I'm still pinned under a passed out Harvey Weinstein and it's Thanksgiving.
I just want to thank my agent, Kevin Uvain, and God, Harvey Weinstein, the Punisher, Old Testament, I guess.
Are you here of your own free will? Has someone coerced you into being here?
Do you count Harvey Weinstein as a coercer?
Well, I'm kind of fed up with Harvey's behavior. And
the 2012 nominees for Best Performance by an Actress in a Supporting Role. Congratulations, you five ladies no longer have to pretend to be attracted to Harvey Weinstein.
Which, in retrospect, Michael Clifford, means everybody knew and nobody did anything about it.
Yeah, everybody knew, and it would seem that a lot of people made little of it. What I found extremely interesting, Matt, was the recording, I think it was in the New Yorker originally, of a young Filipino-Italian woman who was with Weinstein. And what struck me about it was he was there pleading with her. And it nearly struck me the relationship between a heroin addict and the dealer. You know, that pleading, except in this instance, the power was with Weinstein. And there was something disturbingly pathetic about it on one level, but on the other level, the knowledge now that if he had got that woman to come into the hotel room, as he had apparently the previous night with her, as all the other testimonies have shown, that he was this monster. And the whole thing, all of it comes back so much power. Power is behind the whole thing, and you have to wonder how much more of it is going to come out now, not just in Hollywood, because remember, this all started, you'd Bill Cosby, you'd Ailes, the guy in Fox News,
Roger Ailes.
Bill O'Reilly. This now is coming out, spreading right across, and the only positive thing you can say is it is very healthy that this is finally coming out, because that, one would hope and imagine, will show that there's a real cultural change happening.
People might be wondering how it came out now and how it hasn't come out before. It's incredibly difficult to come out and say these things and be believed. So you need enough numbers. So when the New York Times and the New Yorker, both publications have been trying to write this story and publish this story for a long time, but had not reached enough of a evidence point that they could actually run with it safely in terms of journalistic evidence and in terms of the legal threats that Weinstein was able to foist on them. So you're actually talking about this power in numbers of women having to come. You needed that many people to be believed.
And what he did to that woman, that particular Filipino woman, the way he, obviously he was well in with media outlets and her name was blackened in the most appalling way after that, because he found out that recording was out because she had cooperated with the New York Police Department in wearing a wire. And the way what happened to her after that, it was frightening. And you can understand why, apart from the whole internalising thing that went on, why it took so long for so many women to come forward.
Stephanie, what have you made of this?
I just think that, you know, it is, like, I take on board the points that are being said and I agree with them completely, but I wonder if, you know, we're really outraged. I've followed this story for the last couple of weeks and people are outraged, but outrage seems to be where we stop with these things. Like, oh God, it's horrific. And I think we need to, like, stop being outraged and actually do something about this, because these stories keep coming. I don't know, but there, he needs to be made an example of in some way. This needs to stop. And I think, you know, there are people coming out now being like, don't believe everything you hear, and like, let's wait until the court of justice.
He's looking for sympathy. And like, he said, oh, I've got some sort of illness or weakness, I'm going to go off and get treatment and please give me a second chance.
No.
You know, a second chance after, what is it, about 30 women at this stage have come forward.
Yeah. I was watching a video, I sometimes watch videos on Twitter of things being crushed by a hydraulic press, right, because I find it sort of comforting. Anyway, this is a different story, but one of the ones I was watching was this hydraulic press coming down on a can of silly string, you know, and so the hydraulic press comes down and the silly string like sort of sprouts out, and then at the end it explodes. And I think we're at the start of this thing where all of these stories are about to come out, and we need to sort of like buckle up and be like, okay, these are going to come out and we are going to receive them and believe these women, because maybe we don't need to like not believe everything we hear. Maybe for once we need to believe it.
It's like this all is in the background of like women not being equal to men in a lot of fields in life. Like, women are not equal to men in Hollywood. We know they're not paid the same as men in Hollywood. We know they don't have as many high-powered positions. So this man in a very high-powered position is able to do this because there are a lot of aspiring actresses and models that he has monetary power and creative power over. And if we have to deal with that before we can deal with, well, why aren't women believed when they come out and say things?
Let's hear the actress Emma Thompson, what she had to say on BBC Newsnight last night.
I didn't know about these things, but they don't surprise me at all, and they're endemic to the system anyway. And what I find sort of extraordinary is that, you know, this man is at the top of a very particular iceberg, you know, and he's, I don't think you can describe him as a sex addict, he's a predator. But what he's, as it were, the top of the ladder of is a system of harassment and belittling and bullying and interference and what my mother would have referred to in the olden days as pestering. Is he pestering you? That's the word we used to use in the olden days, if you recall. This has been part of our world, women's world, since time immemorial. So what we need to start talking about is the crisis in masculinity, the crisis of extreme masculinity, which is this sort of behaviour, and the fact that it is not only okay, but it also is represented by the most powerful man in the world at the moment.
Something else that strikes me, Emma Thompson apparently also challenged him previously, not in relation to sexual behaviour, but telling an actress that she needed to lose weight. I thought the irony of that, Harvey Weinstein, who's not exactly a small man himself, turning around and telling actresses what they could and couldn't eat.
But he obviously sees women not as his equal. He sees women as an object and as a thing to play with. So when you see women like that, you don't treat them in the same way that you would like yourself to be treated, or the same way that he would treat Ben Affleck or Matt Damon when they're making films.
And let's face it, there is that macho culture in various walks of life. And when you have that, there are going to be individuals within that who use it and bring it to an extreme and turn out and just basically harass women. I mean, that is there. She's right about what she described as the culture of the crisis of masculinity. Yeah. But genuinely, the fact that it's coming out, I think, is hugely positive in that I think it's going to herald a change, because anybody who is that way disposed is going to think twice from now on.
And I think we'd be very naive to think that this would stop with Harvey Weinstein and stop in the States. We definitely have our own captains of industry here and in the UK who are in similar positions of power and have done the same thing, because this is not an American thing.
And women aren't believed here still when they say things.
There have been a couple of occasions when men have lost their jobs in Irish business. Actually, I've written about this with Sunday Business Post for next Sunday, but it's few and far between, and you hear lots more stories around the place of others who have never been challenged on the things that they actually do. Just to finish up, I think it's very sad to think, and it's not the first time I've seen a story like this. This is a case out of West Belfast where a pensioner may have been dead for 2 years before she was found in her home. How sad is that, that somebody could be that long alone dead?
I couldn't get over it. The idea that nobody, like her family, her friends, just assumed that she was alive and well but hadn't heard from her in 2 years. I mean, now I know that I'm a different generation, but if I don't hear from people for like 4 hours, I get a little bit kind of stir crazy. And
that's the Facebook thing, is it?
I don't check it.
When were you last seen?
Yeah, but it's just so sad. There's a Netflix documentary of a similar story, Dreams of a Life.
5 years, apparently.
5 years with the television on and wrapping Christmas presents.
But there's an element of modern life to it. I mean, this is a relatively intimate society, both north and south here. This sort of thing would not be unusual in places like America. It wouldn't be that unusual. And unfortunately, in certain ways, we're developing along those lines in terms of fractured relationships, families, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's why at Christmas time you'll get the press releases from Malone kind of urging people, check on your neighbours, make sure everyone's okay. We have to be told to do these things now because of the way life has changed. Like, do you feel a bit weird going to check on someone? Do they think you're imposing on them or being a busybody if you do it? So it's kind of setting out rules in this new life.
That is the
environment
of privacy of particularly elderly people. And this is probably more a rural phenomenon. But that issue of privacy as well, it's a thing that people tread very carefully around.
Okay, some of the comments coming in again. Sorry guys, have we all forgotten what the now President of the United States said? It's of course Donald Trump in that famous video in which he boasted of sexual assault, and yet he was still voted in. This will be old news soon in relation to Harvey Weinstein. Another listener says all these women knew about him and what he was like, and they still slept with him. They were prepared to do it for a claim to fame. The vast majority did not sleep with him. They walked away.
And this is why women don't come and report this, because that's what people say.
And another listener, and I'm actually, for legal reasons, I'm not going to mention this exceptionally well-known female performer, but Jacqueline Santry says she was known to take advantage of her power when casting male models for her videos. It can happen to men as well.
Oh, absolutely, it can happen to men. But
it's less likely to happen than it happens the other way around.
There is a certain number of instances, but relatively speaking, it's pretty small.
And saying it happens to the other gender doesn't diminish it happening. So, and this argument comes up a lot of time when we talk about harassment. Someone will mention the Diet Coke ad. You know, one instance of it doesn't mean that it's an endemic problem or that it's okay on that side.
I think that if there was parity in like who had the power at the top of the Hollywood iceberg, then it probably would be happening 50-50 up there. But that's not the way the power triangle is skewed.
I have to leave it there. Thank you very much, Stephanie Preisner, for joining us. Michael Clifford from the Irish Examiner, Sinead O'Carroll from thejournal.ie.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.